Hello and welcome to the OMFIF podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends in investment and economic policy from some of the world's leading commentators. On this week's episode, we will talk about automation and the future of work. This is Danai Kyriakopoulou from London, and today we talk to Georgios Petropoulos, Research Fellow at Bruegel, and Darren Acemoglu, Professor of Economics at MIT. Welcome both to the podcast. Very good to have you on the line. So work is something that we all spend so much of our lives in, especially now also with increasing life expectancy. We spend a lot of our daily lives at work. It's an area where we build relationships, we build our interests, our identities. But at the same time, we're also seeing very big changes happening in the area of work, and especially the emergence of new technologies. There is a very big debate around, is this something that will make the life of workers easier, better? Is it something that could be negative, as a lot of the predictions around mass automation of jobs may create downward pressure on wages, for example, or more surveillance in the workplace for workers? On the other hand, it may increase productivity, make our work more purposeful. Where do you both stand on this debate? Are things going to be better or worse? Let's start with you, Darren. What do you think?
I think it's really our choice whether we make things better or worse. Technology is not a deterministic force that impacts with its own volition on the nature of work, wages, employment, or the social organization of our world. It is a set of capabilities that is expanding over time because we are building knowledge, we're building new ideas, we're using those ideas in order to build new capabilities. But then how we get to use those capabilities is a choice. In the past, we have found a way, imperfect way, of using technology for turning the world in a different direction that benefits a large fraction of the population, you know, what you might call shared prosperity. There was nothing natural about that. Many of the technologies of the past, going back to the British Industrial Revolution, where we had spinning and weaving innovations that were directly targeted at replacing workers, or mechanization of agriculture or the factory system, they were all automation technologies that replaced workers. And if nothing else had happened, it would have meant lower wages and lower employment opportunities for many types of workers. But at the same time, we used technology for creating new industries, new occupations, new capabilities, reorganizing production, reorganizing firms, and we experienced a booming demand for labor. So, for example, during the mechanization of agriculture, we reduced the number of people working in the US or the UK in agriculture by a huge, staggering fraction. But at the same time, we built a lot of employment in other parts of the world. So what's really distinctive today is that we are failing to do that. So it's a failure of our society to use technology in the best possible way. And in fact, there are many things we can talk about how we're misusing technology.
Thank you. Spoken like a true economist is saying it depends, and also it very much depends on data as well. You said it's very important to see what has happened in the past. Could this time be different? Could we be seeing shifts that perhaps will be different from what we've seen in the past, where we have been able to make technology work and share the benefits? Where do you stand on this debate, Georgios? And also, if there is going to be benefits from automation, can we actually quantify what we can expect these to be? How can we share those benefits, as Darren was saying, to make sure that we actually see workers be better off as a result?
Yeah, thank you, Danai. I perfectly agree with Darren that it is our choice. And I think this is the way we should see it. On the one side, technology can have some real effects on employment, like the displacement effect, like some productivity positive effects that Darren mentioned. On the other side, the way technology used can bring some additional risks, like the control in the provision of a particular job task by the employer, the ability for workers to have fair social protection. And I think as we move deeper to this digitalization of society, we see new forms being created, and the questions of work protection, the questions on a fair relationship have been questioned. So I think it is a key, since our choice is to move forward and get the most out of the technology, is a key to identify these risks and try to implement fair rules for everyone so that the concerns will be addressed. Coming back to the overall impact of technology, it is very challenging to predict the future. And we are now in a decade where machine learning, artificial intelligence started being implemented, and we expect in the following years to be diffused used in a greater extent. And I think a key difference of these new technologies is that they are more capable to displace human beings in the provision of mental tasks. And we have seen that in games like Jeopardy, in chess, where particular machines that they are created with the specific purpose to be very efficient in the provision of that particular task to play that game have performed very well and outperform human champions. So I believe on the one side, we need to take further to identify the risk. On the other side, displacement is a risk. The question is how we can increase the productivity benefits from these new technologies.
Thank you, Georgios. I think you've opened a number of interesting avenues there that I'd like to explore further. One is what you said about it's not just about works being or certain professions being replaced by automation. It's also that is changing the environment within which workers behave and work. You mentioned the surveillance processes, for example, for certain tasks. What are some of these other channels that we can think through which labor markets will be affected by technology? And secondly, you also gave some interesting examples about how machines are being used to outperform human tasks in some cases. And what are some more examples that we can give to our listeners of that? You mentioned the gaming industry, but also increasingly, we're also seeing it in some tasks that will traditionally, the average person may think are more resilient to changes in technology. For example, even in the medical profession, where you can have machines being able to detect certain illnesses more accurately than trained doctors, or even in journalism, where you can see some examples of machines writing, say, an article responding to an economic data release faster and more accurately than a trained economist or journalist. So do we see differences there in terms of how different sectors will be affected? And also, what are the channels through which we see that happening? Darren, do you want to kick us off with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are all part of the mix. I think when we start from the surveillance point, the biggest threat is really with AI penetrating every aspect of our lives and becoming a much more powerful tool in the hands of all sorts of governments, but especially non-democratic governments. Though we know from the US case and the UK case, for that matter, the democratic governments are not very scrupulous about, you know, using these technologies in order to sort of violate the privacies of their citizens. So I think there needs to be a broader understanding that as technology changes, we have to change our regulations and our norms about what's acceptable and how we can use that technology and what are the limits of using technologies like AI, like gene editing, in order to make them both safer and more in line with the objectives of our society. But coming back to the labor market, I think the key is that many of the technologies that we're talking about are what you would call platforms. They're not really deterministic in how they can be used. If you take AI, the aspect of AI most emphasized is its ability to replace certain skilled tasks, mental tasks, where previously a lot of automation was confined to the realm of manual tasks, like, for example, industrial robots or numerically controlled machines. So there's a lot of concern about whether AI is going to mean that managerial positions, paralegal, medical professions, clerical positions are all going to be replaced by machines. I think there is obviously some of that displacement that is going to happen, but AI as a platform can be used in many different ways. What was very revolutionary in the past was to find ways of new platforms in order to create new tasks in which human labor could be productively and gainfully employed. So if you take AI, you can use it in education for creating a completely different classroom structure with much more interactive teaching, with more skilled teachers, creating an environment that's better for the learning of students with diverse skills or diverse difficulties in different subjects. In healthcare, you can certainly use AI for empowering nurses and technicians for providing more of the services that they are currently incapable of doing and helping the quality of healthcare. You can certainly see how with much more greater measurement and precision control, human factor can come back into manufacturing processes to be able to work in tandem with robotics processes. So there are many applications of AI that go beyond the sort of narrower replacement, but that really brings us back to what are the incentives of the leading companies, governments in developing AI. So right now, the ecosystem that has become dominant in the use of AI is very much focused on automation. You know, if you look at companies like Tesla, Facebook, Google, their business model is not based on employing large numbers of people. They have entered the business with a focus on replacing certain things that were done in the traditional economy in a different way, and now based on more algorithms and machines. And that's a very, very interesting, but you cannot just go down that path ignoring other users of the technology, especially when you take into account all of its social implications. As humans, I think we have a much better way of interacting with each other, being more satisfied in life when everybody get benefit from changes in a more equal manner, and people are not jobless, so that they have a meaningful employment, something that defines their lives. And all of these really depend on technology being used in a direction that creates more jobs, not just automation.
Thank you. I think that's a very important point, and it takes us to the second part of the podcast, which is also about what can we do as policymakers, as governments, in making sure that these benefits are shared and that, as you say, work continues to be a meaningful part of people's lives. Georgis, I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that in terms of the examples, the channels, the different sectors and how they're being affected, but also moving on to the policy side, how can we make sure that the Teslas and the Amazons of this world, and as what Darren was saying, we also make sure that different companies use AI and other forms of technological shifts, not just as a means of displacing workers and saving costs on that side, but also to improve the tasks and the way that tasks are delivered. It was very interesting, the example in the medical sector that Darren brought up. So what policies can governments and policymakers around the world put in place for this?
I think, first of all, we need to better understand, because we are still in the process of understanding how these new technologies work, what are the involved risks, and what are the anticipated effects out of these technologies. And since you ask about examples, I think Darren perfectly covered this part. Just to bring a more general classification of tasks for artificial intelligence, we could, so far in the applications of AI, consider two broad tasks. The matching tasks, which basically have to do with the matching of supply and demand, and the classification tasks, which require a ranking, or if we go to applications, we have medical applications like X-ray image diagnosis, legal services, accounting and auditing, and so forth. So we are talking about new technologies that their applications are expanding to different sectors, to different industries, to different activities. And that is something that can signal its significance for the future. Now, how do we deal with that from a policy perspective? I think the first thing that we have to be ready is to restructure an appropriate way educational and training systems so that to be as ready as possible for these new jobs that will be created. And I agree with Darren that the new jobs that will be created with these new technologies will be quite critical, so that to have a positive outcome when you are talking about the impact of technology, new technology on employment. So on this, I would say that so far training has been something we needed to do in order to enter the job market, or because you were not very good in what we were doing, we needed some additional training in order to become better. But with the fast pace of technology advancement, that is not the case anymore. We need a regular training in order to be able to perform our tasks in a more efficient way, and in fact interact in an efficient way with AI systems, machines, in the provision of a particular task. So I think training should be part of our working life, and this is something that can be discussed, how it can be enforced. Should be part of a labor contract, should be initiated by state, by the government, it should be a private initiative, but this is something that refers to the implementation, which is very important to discuss and reach an agreement. On the educational level, I think the important thing is to be able to capture what are the changes we need to implement in order to bring young graduates closer to employment. Employment in new sectors, in new jobs that can be created. And I think for this, we need a long-term planning, where we take into account the development or the technological development.
Thank you, Georgis. So we can build on that with you, Darren. You're sitting at MIT. What do you think is the role of universities? Is it all more about retraining at the workplace? Is it lifelong training? How do you see education adapting to prepare the future labor force? What other policies can we consider beyond education, building on what Georgis has already told us?
I think education is critical. Continuous learning, as Georgios was saying, is very important. One aspect of essentially what we are witnessing is more fast-changing jobs as new machines come and displace certain subtasks that every occupation performs and creates new opportunities. People need to have more skills. So that means greater flexibility, greater ability to adapt to these changes, and continuous training is very important. But it also highlights yet another use of new technology. I think one of the problems that we have both in our traditional educational institutions, universities included, by the way, but particularly more severely in high schools and middle schools, but also in the training programs, is that we are not really making sufficient use of the wealth of data around us about what types of skills are going to be needed, what are the different comparative advantages of different individuals, that so that they can really try to target their job search and their investments in the right direction. So there is much more that can be done deploying the new technologies such as AI in order to be able to provide the right types of skill. Again, I mentioned the example of the classroom teaching that can change quite dramatically in a productive direction using AI technologies. But the same is true for job centers. Workers who are engaged in continuous learning, either because they have lost their job or because they are already employed, but they can actually apply to new jobs or new occupations, they need to have more guidance from the data from around us. And here governments can play a very important role that is going to direct them towards, yes, these are the types of skills given your background, given the local labor market that you're in. Those are the types of employers that are currently opening jobs and are expected to open jobs. There's a lot of data on this that are currently not used. But that's just one aspect of it. I think one failing of the economics community at large is that we have focused perhaps too singularly on education. I think education is completely critical, but it's not the only tool that we should consider when thinking about how to mold technology and how to turn it into the right sort of force for lifting all boats around the labor market. An important one is tax policy. If you look around the OECD, and particularly in the US, to some degree also in the UK, we subsidize the use of machines relative to labor. So at a time when we are all concerned about creating enough jobs for the future, we are actually telling firms, no, don't hire workers, hire machines. Because when they hire a machine, they don't have to pay payroll taxes, they get a lot of tax benefits. They get additional inducements through debt contracts because they can write off their interest rate payments. They get accelerated amortizements. They get a lot of other support if they are in certain specific sectors. And all of this translates into just an excessive inducement to automation. So trying to level the playing field such that labor is not disadvantaged, I think, is a very important aspect of creating jobs. The other element that, again, doesn't receive enough attention is whether we are completely happy for the market to decide the direction of technological change. I mean, of course, as economists, we are completely on the side of market. Yes, you know, the government's trying to replace markets would be a silly thing and it won't work and it won't be the basis of prosperity. But that doesn't mean that the market always gets everything right. And in particular, in technology areas where there are a lot of building on the shoulders of giants and technological spillovers and companies and individuals going down the wrong path, the government playing an important role for making sure that all technologies and all knowledge is not developed in one specific direction and there is greater diversity and greater use of new ideas in creative ways. I think that's actually something that governments used to do. For example, in the US, if you look at many of the very creative technologies that we are building on today, they all started in government-sponsored programs or in some cases in government labs like the internet. So it's actually important to bring back a government-market partnership in the research domain, and we have to sort of start thinking about what's the right framework for regulating it, what are the right incentives. So it's not just educating the workforce, but educating the researchers is also part of this. And then final thing I want to say is that I think it's very important that we think out of the box and think of new policies to adapt to this new world where technologies are creating new challenges and new opportunities. But it's also very important that experts with the knowledge also call out the wrong policies and prevent the wrong policies from becoming too too dominant. And then I think one wrong policy that unfortunately has received a lot of attention is universal basic income. I think it's very important to point out that that's really not a solution to the problems that we have for a couple of distinct reasons. First of all, I worry that a lot of the calls for universal basic income are really going to end up, rather than strengthening, weakening the social safety net. Because by making something universal and not means tested, the resources are not going to go to the most needy people, people who need unemployment insurance, people who need disability insurance, people who need retraining. So I think one has to really worry about non-means tested programs for that reason. The second, again, I come back to the same thing. I think the imperative for the next several decades is going to be to create jobs. So government programs that redistribute but at the same time create jobs or encourage job creation are critical. So subsidizing labor, subsidizing work like negative income taxes or earned income tax credit, leveling the playing field so that labor is not taxed more relative to capital, those are going to help redistribute towards labor. If you make them progressive, it will help redistribute towards less paid labor, but it will also at the same time create jobs. Whereas universal basic income goes in the opposite direction. It redistributes, but mostly to middle classes because it's not means tested. It also discourages work because it's a payment that's not really linked to work. And I think there is a risk of exactly going in the wrong direction.
Thank you, Darren, introducing some very important points there. And as you said, it's not just about education and economics. It's all about incentives, and it's about how do we manage the incentives in terms of the balance between labor and capital. And I think you've spoken very eloquently about two channels there in terms of tax policy and also policies such as universal basic income, which is also a very active debate here in this country, in the UK. In your case, George, do you want to talk a little bit about this need to connect the markets with governments? How does that dialogue happen? Darren mentioned that data that are not being used, for example, about the governments educating the experts, not just the workers. What is your view on these interactions? And also perhaps to close the podcast, thinking about how will it affect different jurisdictions within the world in terms of the shifts in technology that we're seeing? Does it also depend on the business models that different countries have employed? Is it about the policies that we've spoken about in terms of tax, in terms of social welfare support and policies? What can we expect to see in terms of the distribution of wealth? Because after all, this is something that we're seeing very much today when it comes to globalization. A lot of the political backlash that we're seeing against globalization, it is about the people that have been left behind from changes. But could we see something similar with technology as well and opening up to different technologies taking hold in different industries?
I think, indeed, the future will require a good collaboration between the state, the governments, and private initiatives or institutions, because it is something that the state and the governments can play a greater role and have a great influence in order to make sure that we keep the train on track. And on the one side, it is guidance of creating platforms which can be used especially by startups in order to be able to extend the operation and grow. I mean, in Europe, at least, that is a priority, because comparing European firms with other jurisdictions, we see that the problem is not to create a startup, it's how this startup will grow, will scale up and invest on new technologies, diffuse them and make some benefits which can be shared in a fair way in the society. And I mean, I think in Europe, especially in the level of European Commission, there are some initiatives that go to this direction, like Horizon 2020 project on AI and AI startups, which can be used to boost employment on technology-oriented firms, and that could in turn bring more investment, more development, and try to boost this technology in particular directions, like the connectivity between startups, the new promising applications of AI, the benefit of society. So I think it is important to have some direction from the state. If we go to regulation, indeed, we need to think how to regulate this new era of technology, how these technologies can be used, what are the risks that are involved and how they can be addressed. But there is always a challenge that regulation lags always behind the technological progress. So that will require, let's say, a change of the way we apply the rules, we design the rules. And I think the institutions should be also more efficient in designing rules in order to address the risks that are coming. I think on the redistribution issue, I think, of course, tax policy is a very important vehicle to achieve a fair redistribution. In Europe, for example, we had a lot of discussion, intensive discussion among member states about the so-called digital tax, which would apply apply to platforms which use AI extensively in their business. However, we have seen that in European level, the member states failed to reach an agreement about how this tax would be designed. So while there is a recognition and acceptance that tax policy should be a key parameter on this new era, and with a starting point that there are a lot of benefits out of this technology and tax policies can be used for the fair redistribution of them, we see when we go to the implementation that there are other parameters and political constraints that prevents to reach quickly a consensus around this issue. So I think that is a problem. That is a problem that we should think carefully and we should resolve in the future.
Thank you, Georgios. I think that takes us to the end of the podcast. Thank you both very much for your comments, for your contributions. It's been a fascinating discussion talking about the benefits and costs of shifts in technology. It's up to us, ultimately. I think you both agree on this. It's up to us to make sure that this is beneficial for progress, for workers and life satisfaction in terms of the right policies, but also it's all about data and evidence and really looking into what are the different channels through which different sectors, countries, and so on will be affected by the shifts in technology that we're seeing. It's beyond just automation and the displacement effect. There's many other channels through which shifts in technology will affect the workplace. And it's also about the interaction and the dialogue between the private sector and governments to work together to make sure that this is a beneficial change for the future. Thank you both very much. And thank you also to all of our listeners. And next week's podcast will be available on the OnFIF channel on Tuesday. So you can download it once it has been broadcast or subscribe to our channel. And if you've enjoyed the program, then please do leave us a review. Thank you very much.